This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here with Alexis Richardson. He's CEO of WeWorks and he's the chair of the TOC at the CNCF.
Thank you for inviting me, Ian. Today we announced that Kubernetes has graduated. We've got a number of other projects graduating. Fluentd is in the queue. Prometheus is in the queue. I think Envoy will be next, or as the Yanks like to say, Envoy. So that's pretty good. That's heading up to 25% of the total of 20 projects that we have in the CNCF now, which is 12 more than we had in Berlin last year in KubeCon Europe, which means that we're starting to gradually come out of the nest egg a little bit. We're not a startup anymore as an organization. CNCF was announced in 2015. There was a gathering of the forces, and then all of a sudden, March 2016, we hit the ground running by bringing in Kubernetes as an initial incubated project, and then Prometheus, and the sequence pretty much followed, as I mentioned before. It's taken those projects a bit of time to do what we call writing down the governance of the project. One of the things about the CNCF is that we don't mandate our own model of governance. We have a few common sense requirements, like projects should have a certain code of conduct, shouldn't contravene it, but those are more on the social side, concerned with things like ethics and morality in society, not technical governance. So matters like whether or not it takes a senior committer or two senior committers or 10 to make a decision are decided by the projects themselves. And that's necessary to reflect the fact they're not all operating at the same scale. And we saw this morning that Kubernetes now has, I think, 20 or 30 million lines of code or something like that, which is, was it double the number in Linux? And it's certainly an impressive total. So you need governance and it needs to be agreed and it needs to be stuck to. So now we've actually come out of the other end of that process. It was remarkably painful, but we've now got a set of models that we can work with. Kubernetes has therefore graduated. I like to say we're not in startup mode anymore.
Loose governance is an interesting way of doing this. Most projects that we see tend to have a tight governance at the middle and then devolve some responsibility out. How do you keep the projects aligned with each other without having a strong hand on the rein?
We believe that market forces, meaning essentially users as well as people who might pay for things, drive projects together when they solve real problems for customers. For example, when Prometheus and Kubernetes came into the CNCF, there was some talk about Prometheus being used to monitor Kubernetes, but the integrations that existed were very, very elementary at best. It didn't take long for people to think, aha, people are looking at Prometheus because they're looking at Kubernetes because we're now associated with one brand, the CNCF, and vice versa, which means that end users want this feature. And they would then go and talk to end users who would say, yes, I'm trying to set up a Prometheus and Kubernetes instance here. Can you help me? And that quickly led to integration without anyone having to tell anyone what to do, which I think is vastly preferable to having a committee for integration who sit there and decide which projects should work together and why. Because there are also cases where integration's not the right answer. So for example, to give you two examples, one is called DNS, which is, among other things, a standalone cloud native DNS server, which is necessary for some, but not all applications. It will probably end up also being used inside Kubernetes. So it's not so much an integration as a complete subsumption of the code base. On the other hand, there are other projects which don't really work with Kubernetes at all and don't need to. Great example off the top of my head, but something like Notary. Notary is for signing containers. It's a modern equivalent to GPG for Linux package signing. It's based on something called the technical update, TUF, the update framework. Notary allows a repo that contains containers, which are going to be deployed, to interact with somebody who can sign those containers and then say, I've checked this for something, like maybe it's virus-free or whatever, or the provenance is good, it's come from inside the company rather than outside, and therefore I'm signing off on it, and this is now a golden container that you may deploy in production. At which point, someone else will take it out of the image repository and choose whether or not to actually deploy it into a cluster management system, for example, Kubernetes. There is no actual integration between Notary and Kubernetes itself, yet they are both CNCF projects.
When you talk to people, how difficult do they find it to make that separation? Because Kubernetes is such an overwhelming brand at the moment, and oddly enough, both Notary and TUF started out with Docker. And if people are already starting to make that mistaken identity, that because it's CNCF, it equates to Kubernetes, that's going to have an impact down the line with projects who may come to you, who should be coming through you, maybe stepping away.
I agree that's a risk that is something that the CNCF should keep an eye on. when we started the CNCF, it looked like the orchestration market could go two ways. Either there would be convergence to a single orchestrator, or there would be a multipolar world. I believe there would probably be a multipolar world because, as with networking and storage, there are enough different use cases that you might have at least two or three choices, and probably a long string of things that were little niche versions as well. Today, we have Mesos, Nomad, Kubernetes, and Docker Swarm. Kubernetes and Swarm are kind of converging, at least in terms of the commercial side. If you buy from Docker, you buy their commercial product, they will install Docker and Kubernetes on it for you. But Mesos is a different scheduling model aimed at solving a different set of problems than Kubernetes. In particular, it's excellent for data center scale, private cloud type deployments. It's something which people are moving to from OpenStack, for instance. Nomad is interesting because it's a standalone scheduler, which doesn't bring with it assumptions about what it means to deploy a service and how to route requests to it, which appeals to certain types of users. Outside of CNCF, it's a multipolar world. Would we see Mesos and Nomad come into the CNCF alongside Kubernetes? Probably not, because Mesos, for example, is already in the Apache Foundation. Mm-hmm. So in conclusion, I think it's pretty likely from here on in that we'll see Kubernetes remain the main orchestrator, the main scheduler. And so that does create the potential for perceptions around, well, is Kubernetes the same as cloud native? Mm-hmm. My solution to that is obviously keep an eye on it, but also we need to think about, for end users, what's the benefit of all of this? This is something I talked about on stage today. End users kind of don't care whether cloud native is the same as cloud or the serverless thing is. Really, for them, it's all cloud. Out there in the real world, people are just beginning to understand that is a thing relative to Microsoft Windows in the 1990s versus Apple. That is a triumph of sorts. Obviously, we want to make sure that people continue to invest in these areas that we think are very exciting and useful to them. Therefore, the message has to be very, very, very distilled. So actually, it's kind of like you're buying cloud. Amazon support the right technologies, just the same way as they support the web. Don't worry about the details. And then we'll have this bifurcation between people who pay for things and use them, who will operate at that essentially simplified level, and then the rest of the technical community who develop things, who can worry about whatever they like, because it won't matter.
You often use the analogy of Lego.
Uh-huh. Well, that's because we're in Copenhagen.
But if we look historically around the technology industry, integration has been talked about a lot, but often what we get is a blank brick with no things to connect to. Yes. And companies are expected to do that themselves. CNCF's done a very good job of making sure that integration and that portability is core to everything it's doing at the moment. But when you're dealing with projects outside of CNCF, where integration is still going to be a requirement, how do you extend that trusted Lego approach without falling back into the problems we've had with other issues over the years? Unix is a good example. Windows is a good example. Linux has been a good example at times, where actually the end user suddenly finds, here's a bunch of APIs, go write it yourself.
The answer is, again, in two parts, very similar to the previous one. On a technical level, it's actually very similar to what you just said. We actually do need more APIs. We need more agreement around common formats. Mm-hmm. The CNCF is not supposed to be a kingmaker organization. So in some cases, you might have two formats which are used in very similar but slightly different use cases. For example, we are probably going to endorse this year OpenMetrics, mm-hmm. which is basically taking the Prometheus model for instrumentation and making it available as a potential standard by any other system that needs to do instrumentation and metrics. That is in and of itself a useful thing to do. There may be other things that people pick up, like kind of open event formats or open logging formats that sit alongside it and overlap a little bit. This is all technical work, and it does fall into the category, unfortunately, of here are the APIs, here's the documentation, off you go. On the other hand, from a business perspective, I think there is an untapped opportunity for the end users, as we call them, i.e. big companies that ultimately pay for all of this stuff, to come along and say, well, actually, we would like the foundation and the end users to collaborate and create a set of business standards, much like kite marks in the UK, expressing the quality or some level of service associated with different things. Does something have a complete set of interfaces? How many companies are supporting this product? If I use open source Kubernetes or something more obscure, can I get support from big SIs as well as small vendors? Or am I ultimately going to have to talk to the one chap in the West Coast of Ireland who writes the code? Mm-hmm. We don't have enough transparency on this. And that's fundamentally more important for the business user than the nitty-gritty of an API. And if you had the right balance, you could even have incentives so that people go and make the API stuff simple and then get a business certification to prove that they're a vendor you should trust.
I was quite struck by the number of end-user organizations who are signing up as members, because that takes us closer to your goal there of having business users influence a lot of this. And talking to Dan, he was explaining this whole issue of trying to deal with drift between the different distros out there. Right. It's something that OpenStack has struggled with, is starting to get a grips with, and we've seen it destroy other projects over the years. How do you bind these people together? You've got a lot of outreach at the moment to other open source projects. Cloud Foundry is a very good example, where what they do links in very nicely with a lot of what you're doing, but actually you don't subsume them. They're still their own boss, so to speak. But that may not move as fast as perhaps business users would like when they start to ask questions. How do you square all that?
That's a lot of different things to square. I don't think that it matters if you have different distributions of a thing unless users expect that and need it. Mm-hmm. OpenStack is a monolithic private cloud / data center automation technology, which I think we can now see safely with hindsight is best seen as an evolution of the operating system layer itself, and not really as an alternative to Amazon and Microsoft Cloud as it was first positioned. Nonetheless, it's still essentially a monolithic solution. You do want to have more or less all or none, and you'd like to know that if you can get OpenStack from Red Hat or you can get it from IBM, you can move apps from one place to the other, because wouldn't that be nice? We don't like it when we're completely stuck on one database vendor or virtualization vendor or desktop computing vendor. However, we know that it's often impractical to move things around, so we have to be realistic. In the case of Kubernetes, quite often it's going to be used in unexpected ways. I think, to take a rather far-fetched example, we've seen Kubernetes on ARM, and we see Kubernetes used for Internet of Things use cases. When I was preparing for my talk this morning, I was having a brainstorming chat in the pub with a friend, and he was saying, look, up and down the high street, a lot of these shops are going to be mini data centers in the future. They'll probably be somehow eco-friendly and green, and the sky is going to be full of drones. All of this edge fog computing stuff that we keep reading about on the science fiction pages of the newspaper is going to be mainstream. And then you're going to have things like Kubernetes basically powering all of this. And then you're going to have things like Cloud Foundry, which might run on Kubernetes in the future, but you won't necessarily see that if you're an end user. And then you're going to have things like GKE, the Google Kubernetes Engine, which is a straight-up vanilla interpretation of it. And then you have other things that can be bundled with it, like Prometheus. And those are all valid use cases. So there's much less expectation to have the OpenStack solution of there's one thing and it better be the same, otherwise I'm going to get very cross with you.
So let's explore that a little further. One of the problems we have with software today is it is monolithic. There's very little software out there, if any, that isn't carrying old, unused, and potentially dangerous code because of the standards that were in play when it was written. We've talked for years, go back to the mid-80s and the discussion of objects as to how we would just assemble bits and pieces. Containers provide a useful part of that assembly. The potential for actually creating functions, microservices, elements in containers, and then go back to your Lego analogy, clicking them together to create product. Right. That solves a number of problems. Each one can be individually secured, tested, proven, trusted, and replaced without any of the real problems we have today when we try and version code. How realistic is that looking forward from where you sit at the moment?
It is quite realistic, actually. When I gave the Lego analogy, obviously I was opportunistically using the fact that we're in Copenhagen today. However, I was aware that there is a long history of people using Lego to explain what they do, not entirely successfully, as you pointed out, with the idea of the smooth brick that doesn't actually do anything. That tragically is the state of a lot of integration software over the past. Now, I'd say that the evidence is there in front of you. The actual projects we have now are genuine components that are forming part of a general platform. The difference is it's not a monolithic platform. It's a compositional platform, which actually means that vendors and even customers can sometimes make their own interpretations of it without breaking the rules. So, for example, if I'm Red Hat, I can give you my version of Kubernetes, my version of Prometheus, my version of Fluentd, and a few other things, and call that a platform, and Bob's your uncle. Or I can be an independent, smaller vendor and just do Kubernetes. Mm-hmm. Or just do Prometheus, and they will work together. They already do work together. So that part I'm pretty happy with. That basically means that you can have separate release trains isolated code bases. In the event that one particular project gets contaminated, which I'm not sure is the right terminology, but were a security crisis to happen with one project, it wouldn't necessarily infest all the others. If Kubernetes had a meltdown specter type bug crisis, we wouldn't immediately be running to look at the other 19 projects. So that means that it's much safer. Secondly, I think that the Linux Foundation and the CNCF are using some of the generous sponsorship money that they've got to invest quite seriously in security. Mm. They've got some really good people on this, and they're really starting to motor, and Dan lifted the lid on that today in his talk. Mm. I love the example he gave of SQLite having 1,000 times as many tests as code in terms of lines of code. I thought that was impressive. I also like the way that the story went on to describe what happened when the author discovered that someone else had managed to break his system in 11 places in just under a day using a different approach to testing. We as an organization in the CNCF need to take this to the next level. One of the ways that the CNCF can help open source projects that hasn't been done before is much better testing and security services than ever been seen. For example, imagine 5-10 years down the road, you could start your own open source project on GitHub, a community develops around users and contributors and so on, and the LF or the CNCF or somebody like that is there in the background and can provide a complete security vetting service for you. So if it goes through, you get a clean bill of health on the project.
But how do you make that work? Because historically, we've had attempts to create certified programs that were supposed to focus on security. Many of them become complicated, they become difficult to maintain, and they get out of date very quickly. One of the things that's really nice about the CNCF is that you actually leave it to the vendors. Here's a set of tests, you've got to self-certify, and by the way, these tests are available to every one of your customers. When they take you on, if as part of their due diligence they run this test and you're out of compliance, we're going to have a conversation.
The CNCF can execute on that model as well, and the Linux Foundation can too. I would recommend talking not with me, but someone like Jim Zemlin about this. He's here this week. He absolutely understands this issue, also for Linux as well, and the other projects they're running, which include things like stuff for cars, which obviously has considerable security concerns. You don't want somebody to hack your vehicle when you're traveling at 75 miles an hour down the M1. There might be other models than the one you described, where, for example, the vendors decide that they're all performing identical tasks unnecessarily as part of what they do, and then decide to pool the cost of that. That's something that a foundation could potentially execute on. But I'm not an expert, and I'm speculating about the future and suggesting that, you know, this might be one way that these things work. Just in general, with the Lego analogy, what matters is the projects are independent and don't slow each other down, whether it's for good or bad reasons. Prometheus can't wait on a release because they're waiting on a Kubernetes release. We don't have that, and that's something you do see with OpenStack, which is why as it's grown, it's got slower.
You're investing a lot of time in CNCF. How does that impact Weaveworks, and how does Weaveworks function in terms of its relationship with CNCF?
Weaveworks is a silver sponsor of the CNCF, which is the right tier to use if you're a VC-backed startup like we are. We're backed by Accel and Google. It is not expensive to be a silver sponsor. The total number of sponsors for the CNCF, I think, is around 200 companies, and almost all of them are silver sponsors. As an organization, we contribute to CNCF projects and we use them. We also have some of our own open source projects that might in the future be CNCF projects, and we're optimistic about that. Just on that alone, we get a lot of benefits from being a member, being committed to it as a place where technology is good, and we would like our technology to be associated with that and also to grow community around it in time. In terms of my personal commitment, the whole of the TOC is staffed by people who have exceptionally busy day jobs and often families as well. We're definitely a bit time sliced. Mm-hmm. That was quite trying at the beginning when it wasn't completely obvious how quickly we were going to get things done. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to tell you how much time I spend on the CNCF relative to Weaveworks, but I spend the vast majority of my time on Weaveworks. Let's just put it that way. That is my company. That's what I'm absolutely committed to being successful with. In the CNCF, the 8 other voting members, typically, you know, one of them is the chief product officer of Mesosphere, for example. Mm-hmm. Ben, he's ridiculously busy. There's Camille, who works for a financial fund out of New York. You can imagine what that's like in terms of time commitment. So what we've done is, once we've got enough success and hope and excitement around the CNCF, is largely at the prodding of Dan, we very quickly moved to creating something which we call TOC Contributors, mm-hmm. which is to try and apply the open source model for software projects to the CNCF and the TOC itself. Mm-hmm. Although there are 9 people on the TOC who have a vote on whether a project goes in or not, or whether bad things should happen to that project, there's another sort of 30, 40, or 50 people who want to help, mm-hmm. and that has enabled us to scale ourselves and create working groups and other things that need to happen to get more work done.
huge amount of things have been going on in the last year. If we look forward over the next year, what do you expect to be happening both for Weaveworks and for the CNCF?
For Weaveworks, we have transitioned to being a single product company to being a two product company this week with the launch of our enterprise Kubernetes support offering. And we have some very exciting ideas about where that's going to go as alternative ways of supporting Kubernetes that I think are incredibly exciting in a world of cloud services. Our existing core Weave Cloud product is starting to really motor in the market, so we're very happy about that too. So I think growth and commercial success will be the order of the day on the Weaveworks front. On the CNCF front, I published a sort of mini roadmap today. There's an awful lot going on around security, partly at the project level, partly at working groups, partly at the CNCF level. We've got to bring storage into the story now. You can't be serious about a cloud-native solution unless you can explain where the data goes. Now, the answer could just be it's out of scope. But it turns out that's not going to happen. We're actually going to have storage projects in the CNCF. We've got two already, Vitesse and Rook. Vitesse came out of originally YouTube. Rook is a built-from-scratch project. They're both very promising. Rook is kind of Kubernetes native in the sense it uses Kubernetes to drive itself, as many other things are doing, which is what I call data orchestration. But alongside those two projects, there's also the established storage vendors who all joined the CNCF in a fit of excitement last year and are wondering what they're going to get out of it. And the answer is they're going to figure out how to be vendors of storage in a world of projects like Kubernetes, Prometheus, Envoy, and so on, which they're very seriously, dearly keen to do. But we do need to be very careful here, because if you look at where other foundations have stumbled, again, I'm going to point the finger at OpenStack here very unfairly. The OpenStack moment for us could be if we let the storage vendors and the open source storage projects and the people who want to just make sure that Kubernetes can store data on disk, the API folks, all convert, sort of dogpile is, I believe, the word of the year, dogpile on this thing and try and have a single solution, which is one size fits all and tries to make everybody happy at once. And we know what's going to happen if we try to do that. And we'll end up with a design by committee and a monolithic architecture that doesn't satisfy anyone. So we've got to steer away from that. And I think there has been a storage working group that's been looking at this as a subsidiary organization of the TOC. And we're starting to see a plan emerge. If we can execute on that plan this year and have a few more projects and a bit more clarity for users and vendors, that would be fantastic. The other thing we need to do is invest in on-ramps for developers. So Kubernetes is great if you're a distributed. You heard those guys from CERN this morning saying, oh, I used to be a distributed systems coder, and now it's all much easier for me. It saves me a lot of time. You could sort of hear everyone else in the audience sort of scratching their heads and thinking, am I a distributed systems coder, or am I just a web grunt? For the vast majority of people, they're not distributed systems coders, and you need to give them graceful stepping stone onto the system. And then after that, we'll start to see, I think, lots more things pop up on top, like Kubeflow, which I gave an example of this morning, which is just, now I can install machine learning on my Kubernetes, which is great compared to I have to have a six-month Hadoop POC with five different consultants contesting for my dollar. That was pretty terrible in those days, which are not long ago.
I think it will be interesting from my perspective to hear next year how many of the large organizations have found working within the Kubernetes and CNCF environment compared to their traditional way of buying and developing software. I wish you well for the next year. It sounds you're going to be busy.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.